الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد
وبعد first of all I want to first of all I want to correct something I said last time. Actually, it was pointed it out, but I wasn't, for some reason I did not catch what he was saying. In the case of I'lam, you weren't here when we discussed
it. I wasn't here.
So in the case of I'lam, when you inform someone, you have to inform someone, and you were talking about books that you heard through Sama'ah, and books that you actually heard through Sama'ah. So I'lam is only applied in the case the books that you heard through Sama'ah. Okay, in other words, if you heard a book, or if you received a book through Ijazah, you would not use I'lam. I'lam is only to be used in cases of the books you heard through Sama'ah. That's clear? And I think last time I said, any way you heard the book, you received the book, you may transmit it through I'lam, but that's not correct. Mm-hmm. Only books that you or only hadith that you received through Sama'ah, you may make I'lam for. Advertisement? Good thing, Sir Habib. One left the room. What were we discussing last time when we stopped?
Cross-checking and playing
tips. Yeah, you were not here. This is from my economics paper. Mm-hmm. And we were discussing the hadith criticism, or checking of hadith. And as we said last time, we want to check both Adl and Thank you. Okay. Now during the time of the Sahaba, we gave some examples where, like Abu Bakr and Umar and Aisha, were checking to make sure that the hadith were being narrated properly. And we said this is a type of Jahru Ta'dil. We said this is a type of jahru ta'dil because it doesn't work. We can call this adl integrity. We call it proficiency. As we'll discuss maybe next time, all of the Sahaba are considered adil, as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala states in the Quran that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is pleased with all of them. So what we have in that early generation, what we have in the time of the Sahaba basically is they're checking to make sure that the hadith are being transmitted without any mistake. Okay? They're not doubting whether the narrator is being honest or not. As I said about Ibn Abbas and about, for example, Umar ibn Khattab and Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, he said, I did not doubt you, and I did not doubt your honesty, but I want to make sure that people are careful when they transmit hadith. So during those early generations, or during the time of the Sahaba, basically the concern was to make sure that people are passing on the hadith properly. In other words, without making mistakes when they transmit hadith. And we pointed out that the Sahaba themselves were also very careful in this aspect. They would perspire when narrating hadith, and they would do their best to make sure that they narrate the hadith exactly in the way that they heard it from the Prophet. In fact, if we look at the first 100 years or so, let's say the first 80 years from the time of the Hijrah, to 80 after the Hijrah. Okay. Up until the time of 50 after the Hijrah, there was still a large number of Sahaba alive. So, if, for example, you want to learn Hadith, okay, who are you going to go to during that time? Most likely. You have a choice between going to Sahaba, or you have a choice between going to other people who did not meet the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, but maybe they heard hadith from Sahaba. Who are you going to go to?
To Sahaba.
Okay. during this period, most people would go directly to the Sahaba and take hadith from the Sahaba. So there wasn't really much room during this time for other people to be narrating hadith. So during this time, most of the people who are passing on hadith, they are adl by the Quran, as I said, we'll discuss next time. And also the Zabit is as I like to say in English, Arabic. The Zabit is confirmed, yani, from what we know about them. And in fact, during this time, there's only four narrators. They're not from the Sahaba. There are only four narrators who have been questioned, and whose integrity and ability to narrate hadith have been questioned.
Not Sahaba.
They're not Sahaba. Okay. And even these four, some of them are not. What did you see? One of them, his name is Al-Harq Al-Aur. You need me to write the names on the board? When did he die? Since he's so famous, Abu Sa'ud, when did he die?
154.
Huh?
I don't know.
Maybe a different person. Yeah, 50. Yeah, 50. He died in the year 64. Yeah. Sit in the back of the class.
He was a Sahabi?
No. He's not Sahaba.
He was 64? He died in 64?
Yeah.
64,
64. The Hijra. Not necessary for him to be a Sahaba. Right? Suppose for example...
He's old, like he's less than 50.
Yeah, not necessarily, but maybe he's not from Mecca or from Hijaz, as Ali al-Mufriq was pointing out to us before we came. Okay? The story about him is one of the major tabi'een. Well, do you know what I mean by major tabi'een?
He's one of the major tabi'een.
Yeah.
Kubar tabi'een.
Yeah, from the Kubar tabi'een.
Yeah, why do you say Kubar tabi'een in the narration of this question?
Okay, major tabi'een just means that he met lots of Sahaba. That's all. But even in this case, by the way, Sha'bi and Ali ibn al-Madini, they reject his hadith and they even call him a liar. Okay, Sha'bi, these are two good names to know, I'll not write them. Sha'bi and Ali ibn al-Madini, because we'll discuss the... Try to stay awake back there. We'll discuss people who are a little bit stricter than other people when it comes to grading narrators. So Sha'bi and Ali ibn al-Madini, they call him in fact a liar. But the reason they call him a liar, the reason they don't accept this hadith, is because he was somewhat of an extreme Shia or pro-Ali. Okay. So therefore they don't accept this hadith. Al-Dahabi, in a book called Mizan al-I'tidal, he has a long discussion about him, about Al-Harq. And he concludes he is an acceptable narrator. And in fact, his hadith can be found in the books of Abu Dawud, Tirmidhi, Ibn Majah, and Nasa'i.
Who is that again?
Who?
Zahabi.
Why did he say that?
Huh?
Why he said that?
Yani, the only thing they had against him was he was very strong in his Shia views. Huh? But as we'll see later, this is not enough to say that he's not acceptable as a narrator. If he's honest, as one of the scholars in hadith said, if he's honest, then for us is his honesty and for him is his bid'ah.
But aren't Shia, all those are Rafida, like Akhtar Qabdullah.
Yeah, this is 64.
The
other one, another one, his name is Al-Mukhtar. Al-Mukhtar Al-Kibdad. Of course, that was not his name at birth. Mukhtar al-Kadhdhab. He died in 67. Right, the African?
مختار بن عبيد الثقفي أو دفن؟
he believed that the angel Gabriel, Jibreel came to him and gave him revelation.
Came to who?
Him, Mukhtar.
For his mother.
He believed or he claimed?
He claimed. I assume he believed also. Okay, he claimed or he believed, I don't know which one. That angel Jibreel came to him and gave him revelation. He died in the year 67. But you'll not find any hadith that he narrated. Yani he never narrated hadith. Okay. I mean, there's a difference between saying that the angel Gabriel came to me and gave me revelation and fabricating hadith from the Prophet. Okay. So the second one, Al-Mukhtar, and the first one we concluded that he's actually okay, he's accepted. The second one, Al-Mukhtar, yani he was someone who was misguided, but at the same time, he did not fabricate hadith.
Why does he come in the picture?
Because some of the muhaddithin, they mention him in their collections of weak hadith, and he was from this period, or from those people who were questioned during that time.
So, can
you
consider him from
the Tanakh? Can he
came to be a prophet?
Yeah, I mean, you could. But the important thing for us, yeah, is did he claim to narrate hadith from the prophets? In other words, did he fabricate hadith or something like that? That's the important thing. Well, he did not. This one, unfortunately, I don't have the name written in Arabic here. His name is Asim. The next one is Asim ibn Bumrah. Sounds right?
Thank you.
So it was right on the board. Or tell. Capable of so it's hold the mic in one hand and write in the
mic.
So he was the companion of Ali. I'm not sure what year he died, but he was the companion of Ali. And Ibn al-Madini, the same one I mentioned earlier, Ali ibn al-Madini, was one of the Shaykh of al-Bukhari, one of the teachers of al-Bukhari. And Ahmed ibn Hanbal and Yahya ibn Mu'ayn, they all state that he is thiqa, or trustworthy. And Ibn Hajr called him honest. But there's a scholar by the name of al-Jawzajani. I could have written this one. I could have written it nicer than that. Joseph Jan. He criticized Asim. Okay. But in fact, his criticism is not acceptable. Because Joseph Jan was one of those people who was very pro Uthman and hated anyone who supported Ali. What you call him?
What's the name? Is that the name?
No, I'm saying he's from those people who was very pro-Uthman and hated the followers of Ali.
What is his argument that Asim is not
I'm getting to that. Okay. What do you call those people? They have a specific name.
Uthmaniyun.
La. This is Turkey.
Is this the Juzajani? Juzajani.
Juzajani. Yeah, there's a group of people who are extreme in their support of Uthman and hatred for Ali. They are important in Jahr al-Tahdeed, in this topic, because their Jahr, or their accusation of the people who follow Ali, is not acceptable. What do they call it?
Nawasib.
You want me to write? Yeah. Why don't you have your own piece of chocolate? I can go to the back of the room. Okay. Floral. Nozzle. But you happen to be in everyone's way, but these are the people who are so pro-Uthman that they are against Ali, even almost to Ali himself. Of course, this is against the belief of Ahlul Sunnah wa Jama'ah. So, Asim was one of the supporters of Ali. Therefore, for only that reason, for only that reason, Al-Jawzajani did not accept it. He said he did not accept it. Okay. So far now we've had three. I said that in the first, in these first 80 years or so, only four narrators have been questioned. We've dealt with three of them. So far we said that Harith, we said he's actually okay. Well, the second one, he's crazy. Alhamdulillah, he didn't narrate hadith. Okay, and Asim, the only reason people criticize him, or the only one actually, is Al-Jawzajani, and that's because Al-Jawzajani is biased. And we'll discuss that principle in Jahl al-Ta'lif.
But he was...
Al-Jawzajani is around 200, 300. Much later.
What was his argument against not this, obviously? What was his argument that Asim is not...
Yani, if you study Al-Jawzajani, anyone who is pro-Ali, he'll say he's not acceptable.
For that reason, huh?
He doesn't give a reason, he just said this one is not acceptable. No. But we know his reason. That's what the short, doesn't it?
He's
going
to check the haters. Doesn't work.
Yeah. And the last one, his name is Saleh ibn Namhan. Saleh ibn Namhan. And this is also related to this is one of the people who narrates that Umar ibn Khattab prayed 20 rak'ahs in Salat al-Tarawih. To those people who say ulum al-hadith study is not important. Shu'bah, Malik and An-Nasa'i said he is not takar, he is not trustworthy. Shu'bah, Malik, and An-Nasa'i. They say he is not takar. Ahmed ibn Hanbal said he is takar.
So it's a subject, there's no something behind
that. Huh? Yeah, you have to look at it a little bit closer. Okay. Imam Malik met him when he was very old, and his memory, he had started to, make what we call ikhtilat. Alzheimer's disease, but not.
Malik ibn Anas.
Yeah, Malik ibn Anas met him when he was very old. Therefore, Malik saw his hadith as being incorrect. He's narrating things incorrectly, so he said he's not acceptable as a narrator.
So it could be for that.
Yeah. Exactly. And he's not. As we'll study later, not every narrator necessarily is acceptable all the time, nor is he rejected necessarily all the time. There's some people like Salah, and his old age, he's not acceptable. This is what Malik saw him. He didn't know his history before he met him, and therefore he concluded from what he saw that he's not acceptable. But in fact, he is. Before that time, he was acceptable. So all the narrators we have in the first 80 years or so who have been questioned, in fact all of them except for Al-Mukhtar, can be considered acceptable.
But Ahmed meet him?
Ahmed did not meet him. But he judged on what other scholars said at that time, and he looked at his students, and he looked at what hadith he narrated.
What about John?
What about him? He might have been basing his decision on what the Imam Malik said.
And the same thing for Nisa'i.
Yeah, probably. And Nisa'i, probably, most likely.
Can you conclude from this that it is not important?
No, hadith is not important?
No, we can't refuse hadith just because Rawi from Ra'ali or Shi'i.
We'll discuss that in more detail.
But how did Malik have this mistake to judge somebody based on a few years? Isn't that common in old people that when they get old...
He may not have been that old actually, but he may have after he began to...
المسلم لا يخطئ اختيار.
What?
المسلم doesn't have اختيار.
Our conclusion, our conclusion is that during these years it was mostly the Sahaba who were narrating hadith, and during these years the science of jahl or ta'dil or checking to make sure that hadith are being transmitted properly had already started, and those few narrators who are questioned, in fact as we saw, most of them are even acceptable. And Ibn Abbas, in fact, he said that he was talking like during this period, or actually especially the first 50 years, he said there used to be a time when anyone stands up and says any hadith, all of us will turn and listen to him, because we were people who would not narrate hadith incorrectly. Then he said when people started writing every Sa'ad wa Darun, you can translate that. Every domesticated and undomesticated camel, in other words, when people started following their own desires and going, when people started leaving the strict sunnah of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam in the way of the Sahaba, that's when they really had to start questioning and asking who, and looking to see who's narrating hadith and whether they're authentic or not. The result of this is that since there was very little to do in the early years of Islam, we don't find in that period that many what we call scholars of jahl wa ta'dil. There are not that many because there's no need for them. But after that time, when for example Islam spread into new areas and people began to embrace Islam, some of them were not careful when it came to narrating hadith. Some of them fabricated hadith intentionally. Okay. When we start getting away from the time of the Sahaba, the people who had taqwa and were very careful in narrating hadith, and move on to other people who were not necessarily that careful when it came to narrating hadith, then the science of jahl wa ta'dil becomes much more important, because then you have to, or there was the possibility of people making mistakes. So during this period we have, for example, the Khulafa Rashidun, all four of them were active in making sure that the hadith were transmitted properly, and some of the Sahaba. But the real science of jahl wa ta'dil, as what we'll describe, it really began to develop after this time, because after this time is when the weak or rejected narrators begin to appear. Any question about that? One thing that we should keep in mind about the scholars of jahl wa ta'dil is that this is the science that it's very important for the people to be most honest and to be most careful about what they are what they are doing. And most of the scholars were also very careful. For example, they would not make jahl for anyone or say that anyone is unacceptable unless he's someone who narrates hadith. Okay. In other words, there's many people out there who do not narrate hadith. Some of them lie, some of them cheat, some of them steal, and there's no reason to talk about them. They don't narrate hadith, just don't talk about them. We talked about last time that this science of jahl wa ta'dil is something which is obligatory, farz kifaya, so not backbiting. But even then, the scholars of hadith were very careful. If someone doesn't narrate hadith, if he's not known to be narrating hadith, and the people who were narrating hadith, they were certain people, they were known. These are the people who are passing on hadith. If someone, for example, like Abu Sa'ud, he's into usul al-fiqh and he doesn't care about hadith, like some people, then we will not say about Abu Sa'ud that has poor memory or his hadith are not acceptable, because there's no reason to. And we have to be careful about that. Secondly, also, if it's sufficient to say one thing about a person, you should not say more than that. For example, if Nayef is a liar, it's sufficient for me to make him rejected just by saying Nayef is a liar. I don't have to say, and he also cheats at volleyball, and he does this and that. You just say, and what is sufficient?
Do they know that this thing is said against them? Those people, those narrators.
Oh yeah.
Do they know that this is said about them?
Oh yeah, sure. And it's not something hidden. They didn't hide it. And because they want people to know that this person is not accepted. So therefore, if that news gets to him, they don't care. Also, they were very careful even in using nicknames. If someone has a nickname that he doesn't like, then they will not use it unless absolutely necessary. So, huh? Yeah, but this is he may not dislike it necessarily. So the scholars were very careful, even with respect to the rulers, the hukam, and in the scholars of Jahr al-Ta'dil, did not care about the hukam at all when it came to being aware of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They will not be willing to take bribes and this sort of thing. Even with respect to their own family, also like Ali ibn Madini, he did not allow people to narrate hadith from his father. Because his father was not an acceptable narrator. Abu Dawud said, do not narrate hadith from my son because he's a liar. Abu Dawud. Well, when the person started mixing hadith, when he started getting older, usually his children would close the doors and don't allow anybody to come and narrate hadith from him anymore. He's finished. He's retired.
Yeah. When did the Jahr al-Ta'dil start? Like, did it continue for a long time, or was it that only certain period?
No, it continued at least until 600.
Is he the only son of Abu Dawud, or he named him?
No, he named him. I don't remember his name right now.
Is he meant by liar?
Al-Dhahabi had a son. Al-Dhahabi is from much later time, 700 or so. He had a son that he called him Abu Huraira. And he said, don't take hadith from him. He used to memorize the Quran, then he got busy with other things and he forgot everything he knew.
Al-Madini refused to take from his father?
Madini. Ali ibn al-Madin. To allow himself also, and to allow others to take.
So he only, Zahabi asked people not to take hadith because he's only working with Quran and not spending much time on hadith.
Zahabi is son of Murir? No, because he forgot everything he knew. He went into business or something. A computer.
Major,
right? He said, my son used to know the Quran and other things, but then he got busy with But first of all, before we talk about who is acceptable as a narrator, we should discuss what kind of conditions are to be applied for the critic. You know what I mean by critic?
Yeah.
Not the one who reviews movies. the one who is going to make Jahr al-Ta'dil for other people. There's some people who collected even books on Asma'ur Rijal or books on narrators, and even the one who collected himself is not acceptable. Like Al-Azdi. He has
Al-Azdi. Yeah. I guess.
From Yemen. So you will like this,
sure.
Al-Azdi has a book of weak narrators. He collected a book of weak narrators. But Al-Azdi himself is not acceptable. So therefore, even though his book is very famous, and he's not considered taqa when he narrates about people. So therefore, of course, his jah or ta'dil will not be acceptable.
نعم
okay. He has to be ثقة in himself. What else?
متوكل على الله. هو سيد الثقة. It's not easy to say he's to make to label others.
Yeah, we're trying to say, for example, what are some of the requirements that he should meet himself? Number one, he himself should be ثقة. Or he himself should be trustworthy.
Okay, who will say he's ثقة?
Other people. And for example, Imam Malik. Okay. We'll talk about how someone becomes a adult. Okay, don't use those two dots anymore, never again.
What's the difference between
the adoption? Okay, Tikhla is someone who is both adil and dhabt, both. Okay, what else?
He said,
he has to know Arabic very well.
Okay, he should know Arabic very well.
I didn't see.
Why is that the case? Why should he have to know Arabic very well?
The dalila. See, diraya yakhtalik al diraya.
Dalila, it's
Very different.
He has to know what to say about these people.
He has to know what to say about them, and also he has to understand what other people say about them. Like, for example, one of the expressions they use. For example, this expression.
مثل الريح.
Yeah. If I said, for example, that فتحي is like the wind. What does that mean?
Crazy.
Okay, let me put it this way. Let me put it a different way. Is this a compliment or an insult?
It's
an insult, okay? How about if we say he's like حطب الليل?
Doesn't know what to say.
So he has to know Arabic language in order to know what to say exactly, and also to understand what other people have said in the past. Okay. What else?
يكون فاهم وليس مغفل. واعي أو يعني. Very intelligent man.
Sorry. Okay.
يكون ملم بالتاريخ.
Huh?
يجب أن يكون ملم بالتاريخ.
By the way, this class is now in Arabic, or this is because of you.
Let's know the terminology used in this.
Okay. Let's know لغة plus مصطلحات. Okay. What else does he have to know?
Okay, health.
Has to be in good health. طيب يعني okay. He has to be ثقة يعني عبد الوضوء. As Abdul Aziz keeps pointing out, if he has mental illness, he's not dumb, right? And the physical, which one was it?
Physical,
sometimes? Yeah, according to Abdul Aziz.
Does he have to be a narrator himself?
It's not necessary, but you have to
know
hadith. Not necessarily hadith, but you have to know it. What are we talking about here? Okay, طيب, he has to know what makes the narrator acceptable and what makes him unacceptable.
And the
Jahwat Ta'dib. Adab al-Thabit. No, if he's Adab al-Thabit and he doesn't know the science of.
No, he's not. He wants to be Adab if he doesn't know.
Or Rasul. Someone can be Adab, but he makes a mistake. He says something to them.
Who makes him the Jahwat Ta'dib?
Who makes it?
Yeah, the
Ma'ajib
and the Jahwat.
Yes.
So how come?
And he has to know the principles. He has to know. Well, we'll get to some examples, okay? For example, someone said, "I don't accept this narrator because he talks too much and I'm suspicious about this." Okay. So the guy is saying this narrator is not acceptable because he talks too much. Would you say that the one who said that understands these principles and is acceptable as a critic?
But who makes, my point is, who makes and
the rules itself, the whole subject,
yeah, who established the rules is the Jari' or Mu'addil, or the Mu'addil. So how do you know that he knows?
He said which one comes first, the egg or the...
Which one?
Maybe some people, they defend their own rules.
Yes, that's what I said, for example, the one who said, I don't accept this one because he talks too much. Another one talked about someone and he said the Shia don't like him because of his father. But if you see his beard and his modesty, you'll know he's acceptable. يعني
كوت
سلف يعني if you see his beard and modesty يقول الشبت. So يعني the more in general يعني the principles are well known. They were established like any science يعني through time over time. I mentioned before last time that many of the who is adil and who is adil and who should be made judge for, I mentioned last time that these are actually pointed out in the Quran itself. What kind of narrator should we accept? They are pointed out in the Quran itself. And these scholars applied what the Quran says and what the Hadith says. So the first or the basic pillars comes from the Quran and Hadith itself. And I pointed that out last time. So when we said that he has to know the science of Jahwa Ta'deel, what we're really saying is he has to know what the Quran and Sunnah says about who is the sister and who is not. Any problem? We also talked about how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala described the angel Jibreel, gave certain qualities, and he didn't just say believe in Jibreel because he's an angel, but actually gave certain qualities that we can look at those qualities, and if we find them in people, we know that we should accept what they say.
What about the usul al-hadith? Usul al-ilm al-hadith?
What do you mean by usul al-ilm
al-hadith? It should be like when you are in a school.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're talking about another. I forgot what you're. That's why I didn't, realize what you're talking about. So, yani, the other principles of Hadith, yani, he should be, to some extent, a scholar of Hadith. Also, he should be a scholar of Hadith. Why?
So he knows that he has.
Okay, not just the Rajab, but what else? What are we testing now again? We're testing to see if he is... We want to see if the narrator is Adil and... Okay. Babad means what?
He's saying the correct thing.
Okay.
You don't know if it's correct unless you know.
Okay, if you don't know what hadith are correct and what hadith isn't, what is a mistake and what isn't a mistake, then how are you going to say that he's not Babad? And you can say that someone is Babad if you know the hadith and what are the mistakes and what aren't mistakes. Okay, let's just, before we talk about whose hadith may be accepted, let's discuss some of the basic principles of Jahwa Ta'deel. The basic principles. What I mean by this is that not every statement will be necessarily accepted. For example, if I said that Naif was a liar, he'd be sitting there. Yeah. Okay, Khalid Jurayd is a liar.
Zahra Sheikh Jamali Naif.
Let's just switch now. So someone يعني, lose his position of being fiqh or having ru'a if he pulls his beard out. Important question we'll have to discuss later. What was that thing? Yeah. If I say, for example, Naif is a liar, right? And that will not necessarily be accepted يعني, just because I said Naif is a liar. We have to look in more detail than that. Okay? So there's some basic principles that have to be applied in Jahwa Ta'deel.
Yeah, I just said before that we have to describe the person only with one, let's say he's a liar.
If that's sufficient, yeah, I mean, no need to go on.
So what you are saying now?
According to what you say?
No, I'm saying now, and if a person, okay, if I am a critic, okay, and I said Naif is a liar, doesn't mean every time I say that someone is a liar that it will be necessarily accepted. Okay, there's some principles that we have to apply. Okay? Well, let me say it and you'll understand, okay? First of all, before anyone says anything about any narrator, he has to study the history of the narrator, and we cannot say completely, but in detail. For example, Bukhari, when he was going to take hadith from anyone, in a different city, he would go to that city and live in the city for a while and study the person, look at him, watch him. Then if he finds his character acceptable and so forth, then he'll take his hadith. So someone has to be looked at in detail. For example, there is a narrator called Jabir al-Ju'fi from Kufa. Very famous Shia narrator.
Jabir al-Ju'fi.
Sorry. This time I'm right. After the class, we're bringing a book and show me. Joke. Like Al-Bukhari. Al-Bukhari is also the joke.
Oh,
the joke. Bukhari is the joke.
Same. Jabir
al-Ju'fi. Yani, one of the scholars at that time, his name is Waqi'. Waqi'? Waqi'.
That's Waqi'.
Yeah, like Waqi'.
That's
what he is. Yeah. Yeah. Could
be a
different one. He said about Jabir al-Ju'fi. He said if it were not for Jabir, the people of Kufa would not have any hadith. Yani, sometimes they make extreme statements. If it were not for Jabir, yani he did not actually study the Jabir close enough. And he just went to Kufa, he found him yani, narrating many hadith, and many of these hadith he knew. So he said, yani, this is the person who brought these hadith to Kufa. Abu Hanifa studied him in greater detail, and he said, there's no one who is a greater liar than Jabir. So we have to study the person in detail. Some people are good in certain sciences, but not in hadith. Okay?
So Waqi'a says that if it wasn't for him, no hadith would come to Kufa.
If it wasn't for Jabir al-Ju'fi, the people of Kufa would not have any hadith. In other words, yani, he brought to them many of the hadith that they knew.
By the way, when the military, it's not Nisa Zaman.
Hmm?
When they use like the word Nisa Zaman.
What do you mean Nisa
Zaman? I tell you that.
Okay, there are some examples from the time of the Sahaba that they would use the word kadhaba, okay, to mean that this person made a mistake.
Yeah, that's clear.
Okay, that's true, yeah, but when we're talking about the people of Jahra, the ideas, no, they say kadab, they mean he's lying.
No, he's kadab intentionally.
Yes. Okay. As I said, some people, for example, are good in history, but they are not good in hadith. The scholars of history take their narrations, but when it comes to hadith, they are not acceptable. If someone makes jahr for someone else, sometimes this is the result of anger, or hatred, or jealousy. And because these people are human beings, so you have to study the case to make sure that if someone, yani, what we're talking about actually here is that, for example, if we have like 10 scholars, and they all say that Na'if is tafa, okay, and I come along and say, yeah, he's a liar. Before we accept my statement, we have to study to make sure that my statement is not because of something like anger, or jealousy, or hatred.
Subjective,
yeah, you have to make sure. That's a good word, subjective. Let me write that down. Right, that's the first benefit I got from my students. From my book. For example, I'll give you an example. Imam Malik. When that stops, we'll take a break. Imam Malik. Okay, anyone here know who Ibn Ishaq is? Sahaba Sira. Sahaba Sira, yeah. He's one of the first people to compile Sira, or the biography of the Prophet.
Ibn
Ishaq. Ibn Ishaq. Muhammad Ibn Ishaq.
What's his book name?
Sira to Rasulullah. It was before Sajjah. Okay, now with respect to the hadith, by the way, of Muhammad Ibn Ishaq, he is considered fiqh, but he's mujallid. Okay, we'll discuss him later. But the point is that most scholars consider him, in general, acceptable. Imam Malik called him Dajjal. Judging by the response, if you call someone Dajjal, it's very clear. Yani, what's the thing that Muhammad ibn Ishaq is taqar or accessible, and we have Imam Malik saying he's Dajjal.
But we say they say Muhammad is also
Muhammad. Yeah, he's taqar or Muhammad.
He's taqar or Muhammad?
Yeah. We'll get into that. Who said that
Ibn Khaldun is not Muslim?
I don't know. I can't imagine. Well, alhamdulillah, I didn't hear him say
it. I can say if I see this and discover it, it's a mistake.
But what was the reason that Malik said that Ibn Ishaq did that? No, why would you know? And Ibn Ishaq did not accept Imam Malik's position as Imam. And he did not show Imam Malik any respect.
Uh-huh.
And he did not treat Imam Malik as a scholar.
According to your view, this.
Pardon?
According to your opinion.
No. And this is what they studied. And if you read the history of that time, Ibn Ishaq did not give Imam Malik what usually scholars give each other at that time.
Ibn Ishaq did not give
Imam Malik. Imam Malik? Like, we know, but we know that was the case. So Imam Malik, either out of anger, or Imam Malik, he knows the situation. If anyone doesn't respect him as a scholar, he thinks there's something wrong with that person. He calls him Dajjal. Okay. So we cannot accept this type of jahl, which is not based upon objective. Now the question is now, what about Imam Malik? Should we now reject him because of what he did? What he said?
No.
Why not? He said no. You see?
That's what I'll put in. Either anger or
something. Yeah, we all had smoke before he...
Huh?
I know it's no. Because everybody is respecting our Malik.
Madhab,
we have to go through the categories.
Mm-hmm.
The three meets before, we can accept them.
Okay.
And maybe only in this particular case, we cannot properly take his work.
Okay, so if we're studying Imam Malik, we see that in general he is just. He's odd. Right? Every human being has some weakness in that. So if we find one mistake from Imam Malik, if we reject him as Imam or as Taqa, then who will be left other than the Sahaba? So what we do is we don't accept him when he makes a mistake. But as long as that is just once or so, then we still accept him. But if we find him doing this a lot, like at Azdi, like at Jozajani, who I mentioned earlier, that's a different case. Jozajani, all the people of Kufa, they're not accepted. Because they are, Jozajani, we mentioned him, he's a supporter of Islam and Nasir.
But in this case, we assume that Imam Malik should mishap just because he didn't respect him.
Yeah, what we do is we have to study the case. How come all of these scholars say Ibn Ishaq is Taqa or Mutajjid? Except Imam Malik. Okay.
Maybe there is some...
So what I'm saying is in a case like that, you have to study it. That's what I was... Remember I began, I said if I say Nayef is a liar, doesn't mean even if I'm a critic, then necessarily it will be accepted. So we have to study. When we study this case of Imam Malik, we saw, what was the reason? That there was envy or some anger between Ibn Ishaq and Imam Malik. They led him to say that he is
Jeff. The problem with that guy is called Mudellis.
Hmm? Right, but you do not call Mudellis Jeff.
What is the definition of the Jeff's definition of Mudellis?
Mudellis is someone who makes the deal. We'll discuss it more in detail later, okay? I know you would like Dajjal is Dajjal. Dajjal means someone who is one of the greatest liars among the people.
It's not because of his tadlis.
No. Someone makes tadlis, he's not calling him a liar.
If you make it too much,
even if you make it a lot.
Maybe.
There is a big difference between tadlis and lying, although Sha'bi says that this is the brother. Tadlis is the brother of lying. There's a big difference between the two. And when you say someone is lying, that means that he is intentionally fabricating and making up hadith or making up chains and so forth. Mudallis doesn't do that. He might drop someone from the chain, but he gives you the information that you can check and find out who narrated and whether it's correct or not. But the one who is a liar, judge especially, he's making up stuff. There's a big difference between the two.
It's not maybe because of the definition of the Imam Malik that the belief is the same as the
The principle is that we cannot accept the jahl which is based on subjective.
I love that.
Just subjective reason. Okay. Please. That was the third principle. That was the second, right? First principle is you have to study all of the, as much as you can about the person before you decide. Second one is we reject the jahl, which is based on jealousy or anger. Third also, we reject the jahl, which is based upon differences in aqidah. What we mean by that, is that suppose someone is Shia. Well, there's a difference between Rafida and Shia. Oh, you want to take a break now?
Yeah.
I didn't say anything about the ladies or anything.
No, going to
Shia. Take a break. Study the people in detail. Mm-hmm. Second one, reject the Jah, which is based on anger or jealousy.
Okay.
And it says,
And if it says,
the verse in Aqeedah? Hey, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Oh, you're already on?
Inshallah.
Well, we lost a few seconds. For example, the third one is reject the jahl which is solely on the basis of Aqeedah.
Okay.
Huh?
You use this kind of jahl?
Yes, it's just based on Aqeedah. For example, in the early years, Shia, there's a difference between the Shia or Rafida. Shia basically, when the scholars of Hadith use it, the early scholars of Hadith, they're talking about those people who support Ali.
Okay.
Who support Ali perhaps a little bit more than what the Ahl Sunnah and Jama'ah support. But they do not, for example, curse Abu Bakr or Umar. And they don't believe, for example, Ali is Ilah or Ma'asum or these kind of things. Okay. The Shia do not do those. Al Rafida, they do. Okay, so Zayd ibn Ali, when they asked him to curse Abu Bakr wa Umar, he refused. So they left him, and he said, "Rafiduni." So this is where they get the Rafida from. So if someone is Shi'i, and he's just someone who supports Ali, there's some people like Al-Jawzijani, because of this reason, regardless of whether the person is idol or Dawud, he rejects all of them. The later Shi'a, they do the opposite. Anyone who loves Abu Bakr wa Umar, they reject all of their hadith.
Even his Shia.
The later Shia. Yeah, he will not be Shia for them.
You mean Shia now have their own hadith?
Shia now are Rafida, first of all. They are not Shia from this terminology.
Do they have their own hadith?
They have their own collection of hadith. Yeah. If we have time, we'll discuss this later.
Yeah. What was the collection of fabricated?
Their own collection of hadith. Many of them are authentic. Sahih. And Al-Kufi. Al-Kafi. Many of them are authentic. For example, Subki. Subki, this is now just a much later generation, but I'm going to give an example from them. Zahabi was... you all know Zahabi, one of the famous scholars, especially of history and biography.
Isn't he a student of Ibn Taymiyyah?
Student of Ibn Taymiyyah. Zahabi, he had a tendency to, in writing his books, if the scholar he was writing about was from the Sha'ira, or the Sha'ira Madhab, Ash'ari, what we say in English, Ash'ari Madhab, he had a tendency to write just a little bit about him. He was a scholar and this and that and this and that. But if he was what they call Salafi in his Aqidah, then he had a tendency to write a little bit more about it. Sahib? Well, Subki, he was very upset with Zahabi. Subki is about the same time, just a little bit. He died a little bit after Zahabi. Well, he said, yeah, this is not fair from Zahabi. But if you go to his book called Tabuqat al-Shafi'iyya, the Tabuqat of the people of the Shafi'i Madhab, he did exactly the same thing, only in reverse, because he was from the Asha'ira. Anyone who was from the Asha'ira, he made and the biography very long, if it's not from the Asha'ira.
We can check one of them and it should be very good.
You have to put them together. But that's not so bad, because that's not actually rejecting someone. Zahabi did not reject someone just because he's from the Asha'ira. But I'm just giving an example. We also reject the jar of the Sufis and the Hadith scholars against one another. Unless there's some other evidence for it.
We reject Hadith
from Sufis. Almost asleep.
We reject Hadith from Sufis, eh?
No, we reject the jar of Sufis and scholars of Hadith against each other.
Why the second one?
Because the scholars of the Hadith, as I said, unless it's supported by other things.
Jar and Sufi, we reject it.
Both, because the scholars of Hadith in general did not like the Sufi. Because the Sufi had for them strange things. Like what you mentioned last time. Someone reads the Hadith and he sees a light coming from the sky, therefore they'll believe in the Hadith. وَحَجَّتْنِي قَلْبِي عَنْ رَبِّي. And these kind of things are just completely unacceptable to the scholars of Ulum Hadith. So in general, they had kind of a bias against Sufis. But Sufis, on the other hand, did not like the scholars of Hadith because they make Jahwa al-Ta'deen, which according to them is what?
Ghaiba.
And also...
Ghaiba.
Ghaiba.
Ghaiba is...
Ghaiba. But Shukani's title confused me.
Anyway,
what was I saying? Yeah, the Sufis, okay, they're not like the people of Hadith because of this. They said they're backbiting. And also, they didn't accept anyone who had anything to do with governors or rulers. Especially the Sufis of North Africa. They didn't like, if anyone is known to go to a ruler, this means he's not. So there was many scholars of Hadith that used to make nasiha to the rulers, like Zuhri. And so for them, they do not accept it. So they make jahd for the scholars of Hadith. The scholars of Hadith do the opposite. So unless there's some other support for it, some other evidence, we do not accept it. If a Sufi says about a scholar of Hadith that he said in such, we do not accept it unless there's some other evidence to support what he's saying. And the same in the other case. Not just because we're studying Ulum al-Hadith doesn't mean we accept anything the scholars of Hadith say about anybody else. No, there also has to be some evidence for it.
So we don't accept any judge from Ulama al-Hadith, Sufiya and Prayer, right?
Vice versa, unless there's some evidence for it, that's what they're saying. Okay. Also, we don't accept the jah, which is based solely or due solely to differences in madhab and in fiqh madhab. So, for example, sometimes some of the Shafi'is would accuse the Hanafis, say they're not acceptable or vice versa or this kind of thing. And if we study it and we find it's just basically because one is from one madhab and the other is from another, we don't accept this kind of jah. And this is related now to this. We don't accept the jah of anyone or ta'heel of anyone who is not a specialist in this field of jah or ta'heel. For example, someone didn't accept another narrator, or that he said he's not acceptable. I don't remember exactly the word used. So one of the scholars of Hadith said, why don't you accept him? And he said that I saw him urinating while standing. Urinating while standing.
No,
not narrating while standing. So he said, what's wrong with that? He said if he urinates while standing, he's going to get his clothes dirty with Najasa, and then he's going to pray in it. So the scholar Hadith said, did you see him actually do that? And you saw him urinating standing, but did you actually see him get his clothes dirty and go pray in it? And he said, no, I didn't see him, but I saw that he was going to do it. In other words, in his mind, since he's Jani urinating standing, this means Jani that he's going to do that. So this person, Jani obviously is not a scholar in Jahu Ta'dil, we cannot accept his Jahu. Or for example, the one who said that Jani, this person talks too much, so I don't trust him. And he's not fatwa because he talks too much. And we don't accept the Jahu or Ta'dil either of someone who is not a specialist in this field. Like the ones who said, if you see his beard and his modesty, and you'll know he's step up. Well,
I suppose that's the person's first example. Mm-hmm. Is this because he doesn't know the hadith? Because it also starts with hadith there.
The one who accused him?
Yeah.
But in general, it's considered makruh, kharam, and marubah. Also, man, if you say about that, then it was considered a type of person. So, what number are we on now?
Seven.
Thank you, Abdul. The only one. I know you're still. So, we reject the jar of the scholars who are overly strict when they disagree with other scholars. There's some scholars when it comes to making jar, they're very, very tough. And if someone makes just one or two mistakes, lost it, not all. Yes. I mean, from you've never had a teacher like that? You don't get like 98%, you get a C in the class. No? Well, that's because you were never in my class.
Because you're in C.
So then, yeah. So, I mean, there's some scholars who are very tough. The slightest, blemish. No blemish.
That's a good one.
The slightest defect that they see in an area, they will reject it. Now these scholars are useful for one thing. Okay? That is that if they say someone is adl or qabit or tafa, that means you can really, you can believe what okay? These types of scholars include Yahya ibn Sa'id al-Qattan. Yahya ibn Sa'id al-Qattan did not accept hadith from Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak or Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi. Well, if you know these two, they're scholars of the hadith in their own right, and he would not accept their hadith. In every generation we find one scholar who is strict and the other one who is less strict. Because he's too tough. He found a few mistakes. For example, in the early generation, there was Sufyan al-Thawri and Shu'bah. So Shu'bah was much stricter than Sufyan al-Thawri. After that was Yahya al-Qattan and Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi. Well, Yahya al-Qattan was much stricter.
Who was the Sufyan al-Thawri?
Shu'bah
ibn Snow. Shu'bah ibn Mahdi.
Shu'bah ibn Mahdi?
Yeah.
He's very famous. He doesn't need his father's name. He's so famous. Well, the next generation we have Yahya ibn Ma'in, and Ahmed ibn Hanbal. Well, Yahya was strict. Well, the next generation we have Abu Hatim, and Al-Bukhari. Abu Hatim was strict. Naam, ya Abu Kareem.
You catch the
third generation. Third generation, or the third one? Yahya ibn Ma'in. And Ahmed ibn Hanbal. And Yahya was strict. Yahya was strict, yes. La, people like al-Bukhari or Ahmed ibn Hanbal, they're considered mu'tadil. They are neither this side nor this side. That's why they're considered the greatest scholars. Ibn Hibban was also very strict, and he was also very lax at the same time.
Yeah, that's what they know.
Okay. Very lax. I will explain to you how someone can be both at the same time.
And Tadir strict and
Come on. The principle here is that we do not accept the jarh of scholars who are very strict when they disagree with other scholars. And as I said, the usefulness is that if they accept the narrator, and we can be sure that the narrator is good. We also don't accept the ta'dil of narrators who are scholars who are very lax. Now, what's the benefit of those scholars? Like Al-Tirmidhi, it's considered yani lax. What's the benefit of those scholars? The opposite of the benefit of the other scholars.
Somebody is
Zaif,
he's real.
Yeah. If they say someone is Zaif, yani this means he must be Zaif. If even a Tirmidhi doesn't accept him, yani this means yani he must be. Yeah, I'm getting to that. So Ibn Hibban,
what's the benefit of the first one?
The benefit of those who are very strict.
Yeah.
And they make an ijab for the smallest thing. Yeah. If they say someone is taqa, then you know for sure this one must be taqa. The other ones, yani the group that is if they say someone is Zaif, that means yani he must really have problems.
In the first case, Zaif is really. In the second case,
Ibn Hibban was very strict. When he found anyone making a mistake or a few mistakes, he would consider him, he would put them in his book of weak narratives. So he was very strict on that point. But he was very lax on another point, in that if someone is what they call majhul, or unknown, and if he found just one person narrating hadith from him, then he considered him adil. So we have both extremes in the case of Ibn Hibban.
Can you repeat that?
And the problem is he wasn't very consistent, because sometimes you find the same narrator in his book of fiqhat and in his book of da'afat. when it comes to people who are unknown, basically Ibn Hibban assumes the person is adil unless there's some proof that he's not. And even if he's not known, for Ibn Hibban he would be considered adil. So in his book of Taqat, or trustworthy narrators, there's many narrators that other scholars say this person is unknown. But for Ibn Hibban it's not okay. So he's strict and easy at the same time. So when it comes to unknown narrators, we don't accept his ta'dil. And when it comes to narrators who are known, we don't necessarily accept his jar. So both cases. Yes.
Now. We don't accept his difference from others.
Now. That's what I said. And the strict scholars, if they disagree with others, we don't accept their jar. Also, the easy scholars, if they disagree with others, we don't accept their ta'dil. Shabi says someone is taqa, yani that is almost sufficient. You don't have to look to see what any other scholar said. Because Shabi said he's taqa, khalas. Yani he's so extreme, as I said, he didn't take hadith from Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak, a scholar of hadith himself. So what that means is if you find his tazkiyah for someone, or his making ta'dil for someone, it's almost sufficient in itself. Almost, yeah, he wasn't putting it simply, but you're right, in general, since they are extreme, يعني we don't really use their opinion.
حتى هذا الشيخ will affect the behavior will be صحيح or
right?
Yeah. Okay, so if you have two, and one consider the hadith to be صحيح, and the other consider it to be right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's up to you to choose.
Can you apply these principles? For example, there might be a hadith which al-Bukhari says is صحيح, but the Sha'bi he says it's, he doesn't accept it. Okay.
Okay, but still now, يعني from the lecture last night, there are some hadith still are not known to be صحيح or not. Like Ibn Baz says it is صحيح or not. And who was the other
hadith?
Yeah, Al-Bani said,
Al-Bani said, Ibn Baz said it's صحيح.
Right, and Al-Bani said صحيح.
No, the other way around.
I asked the person, but they said no more.
So we can't go on to those principles and check.
Al-Bani usually he writes a lot about it, so you can see what other principles he's applying. If he applies a weak principle, you see it. But Ibn Baz, as far as I know, he has never written about it. At least himself. At least, yeah, I don't know if there's anywhere where he has written in detail, for example, about Salat al-Tasbih. So we cannot really see what is the principles he's applying. Except for one, yeah, he said it doesn't resemble any Salat that we know of. That's one of the principles that he applied to that hadith.
And it sounds more like a rose of Manar al-Munid.
No, I think one of the Sahaha al-Sitta is a book of Hadith al-Habban. Well, not Sahaha al-Sitta, but he has a collection of Sahih Hadith. We will discuss it in detail, inshallah. The last principle, actually there's some other principles, but the last one I'll mention, is that if someone is well known and is very famous for being a fiqh, being a scholar of hadith and passing on hadith, and is accepted by all the scholars, then we do not accept any jar for him unless there's some clear proof about it. For example, Al-Zahabi has a book called Al-Du'afa wal-Masrukin. Al-Zahabi, also Al-Zahabi, Al-Du'afa wal-Masrukin. That's why I said it like that, to get confirmation. In this book, he has one narrator, his name is Abu Abdullah Muhammad. Abu Abdullah Muhammad ibn Ismail al-Bukhari al-Ju'fa. Al-Bukhari. I didn't want to make this joke, so I gave you his name. Okay. In that book he has al-Bukhari. In that book, Du'afa al-Bukhari. The reason he has it, because near the end of al-Bukhari's life, and some people were most likely jealous of al-Bukhari. So one scholar, his name is Muhammad ibn Yahya al-Naysaburi. I know it's not you.
I have the team.
When you say that people get jealous about
it. Yeah, I'm telling you, Muhammad ibn Yahya, the one I mentioned earlier, he wrote a letter to Abu Hatim and Ibn Zura, Muhammad Zura. Abu Hatim, he wrote a letter to Abu Hatim and Abu Zura, both of them. Well, he wrote in that letter that Al-Bukhari believes that the Quran is created.
Okay. So therefore, after that time, Abu Hatim or Abu Zir'a refused to narrate any hadith that they had from Al-Bukhari. But we know Al-Bukhari, and he was very well known, and his opinions were well known, and even his opinions on this point were well known. So we cannot accept the Jarh of Muhammad ibn Yahya al-Nasaburi for Al-Bukhari, because we know Al-Bukhari, we know his position. And it's not what he claimed in this letter. But because of that reason, because some people accused him of something, Al-Dhahabi included him in that book I mentioned earlier.
So if it doesn't, I mean,
that his purpose was to mention those people who were criticized. Then in the discussion he'll say, yeah, this is not. Yeah.
So based on this fact that Al-Bukhari cannot narrate a hadith which is weak or can't be all strong?
Because his position is well known. We know him.
Yes.
Nothing, there's nothing missing from his life that we don't know about.
And this on this.
But it doesn't mean that every hadith he narrates is authentic.
No.
Is that what you're getting at?
Yes.
No, that doesn't mean that at all. But we know that if a hadith has some chromium, it's not from him, it's from someone else in the chain.
When you say that people get jealous about him, so this is a subjective statement.
I said it seems that some people...
And we take a part from it.
We what?
I mean, there's no
way that we can explain why this man, Muhammad ibn Yahya, wrote this letter about al-Bukhari when we know it's not true what he wrote in the letter. That's the point. Yani. So I just said it seems, yani. That was from me.
So,
it was my... I'm sorry.
Because maybe he heard something from other people and then he wrote the same thing to other people.
Yeah, that would also be his mistake though.
Okay,
any question about those basic principles? Okay, for a narrator to be accepted or made ta'dib for him, what are some of the general conditions that we, in general now, very general, what are some of the conditions that he must meet? Now we talked about who can be the critic, we talked about some of the principles of jahl ta'dib, now let's get to the narrator themselves and talk about some of the characteristics that the rawi or the narrator himself must meet.
Yeah.
And we mentioned the adl, okay. We mentioned adl wa dhabit. Now we want to get into a little bit more detail. What do we mean by adl wa dhabit? For example, when we say adl, what do we mean by that?
That there's nothing can be
taken. Now?
There's nothing can be taken on him. I keep myself.
Taqi.
هل شيء ممكن أن يؤخذ عليه؟
can you be more specific؟
يعني لم يعرف بالكذب ولا بالفسق ولا
okay. يعني from Islamic point of view, what we mean by this is يعني he performs الواجبات and he يعني stays away from the forbidden things. So he performs the obligatory duty, stays away from the forbidden things. And also he should have something. Well, I'll get to that later. Well, I'll mention it now and get to it later.
What is this again? The
characteristics
of who?
A rawi that we'll accept. Okay. Huh? A rawi who we make that deal for. And he tells us as a high level. Okay. Not everyone who we accept, we call him tefa necessarily.
So principle of the character of Rawi or of the one who makes Jarh al-Tahdith?
No, we already discussed the characteristics of the one who makes Jarh al-Tahdith. Now we're talking about the Rawi himself. What are some of the characteristics that he must possess for us to accept this hadith? Under this one also we can include he must not violate yani Muru'a. How would you translate?
Nahum.
Hey, how would you translate Muru'ah?
You know, yakhruf is...
You are.
Hey, have a hole.
Yakhruf. Moreover, yani, he must be of noble peerage. Why is that important? Why would we consider that any part of his being idle?
You mean that like that was this is your point?
The whole is not.
The definition of
that he doesn't violate any of the principles of Murua.
He doesn't take unjust side.
Well, what do we mean by Murua, for example? Or what do we mean by violating Murua? What would be an example of that? Now it is a difference. Okay, this is something that changes over time. Okay, it used to be. Obviously not anymore.
No,
yeah, I know. In the Genova, if you eat two dinners in one day,
it doesn't cover his head.
Yeah, I mean, things like this, yeah. If someone is eating while standing or eating in the marketplace, he's seen eating in the marketplace, yeah, and during that time, something Annie that shows that he doesn't have noble character. But why would that be important, Annie? Why would we consider that as Annie?
As that.
Hmm?
Having this open?
I mean this open?
Well, the button is off.
Having this open, I haven't read this one before.
No, okay, maybe this is the having a head cover. It's
also the design.
So, why is this important? Yani, why should we say that the narrator should have noble character? Why? What's the relationship between having Murua and narrating hadith?
I didn't know.
Thank you. You're an honest man. You were a liar 15 minutes ago.
What's the relationship between eating in the
marketplace? Yes, yeah, exactly. What's the relationship between eating in the marketplace and narrating hadith?
First of all, is this the correct translation for Murua? I mean, you relate to someone who eats in the market that he has no Murua?
Does
it have something to do with haya?
Okay. Yes, yes it does.
So if he's eating in the market, maybe he doesn't have... I don't know, in their mind, that if he eats in the market, so he doesn't have haya.
Okay. Yani, if he doesn't have these characters in him, then yani, he doesn't have...
What is it?
And he's much modest. And he's not very intelligent either, to some extent. And because he's doing things that will lead people to blame him for what he's doing. Okay, so both points. And it shows that there's something, yeah, if he doesn't have that much modesty in front of people, then maybe also when narrating hadith, he may yeah, say things which he feels may not be correct, or he knows they're incorrect, he feels to say them. Okay. And also, if there's something, Yanni, that is accepted by all the people, and he goes against it, say, Yanni, like if you go to Berkeley, Delaware Avenue, you'll see many examples of Kharam al-Murua in the United States right now. And it means, Yanni, there's something suspicious about it. But it's not the case that if you see him do something once, okay, that his ajala will be, Yanni, for example, if you see someone eating in the marketplace once, that doesn't mean yani, you're not going to accept his hate. But it's a matter of yani, doing it over and over and showing that you're not the proper character. Okay. So with respect to Adil, we have to make sure that he performs the wajibat, stays away from haramat. Haramat also he has yani, this murua or moral character, noble character. So what about with respect to the Baal? Look at some of it in more detail. What are some of the things when we say ضابط, what do we mean?
The good memory.
He has a good memory. If he narrates from his memory, he has to have a good memory. If he narrates from his books, what?
Honest.
Honest is the same. And if he narrates from his books, what's the condition?
He has a
nice library. He has the good handwriting that he can. And for example, we see him writing like this. And it means that when he writes, he's careful in his writing. And when he's, and he makes sure that what he's writing is correct. What else? Here's what the Imam al-Shafi wrote in the Kitab al-Risala. Okay. Covering both, actually, Adl wa Dhabt. He who relates the hadith must merit confidence in his religion. In other words, he must be adil. He must be known as reliable in his transmitting, and he loves it. He must comprehend what he transmits, and he must understand the hadith that he's transmitting. He must be aware of any pronunciation that may change the meaning of the hadith. Must be aware of any pronunciation. Obviously, I would not be acceptable on this basis, but of any pronunciation that may change the meaning of the hadith.
Yes, at this point, you have.
Can I just finish the quote first and then?
Yeah, sure.
He must be capable of transmitting the hadith word for word as he heard it, not merely transmitting it according to its meaning. Now, we discussed this before. Obviously, this means the Shafi is from those people who say it's not allowed to. Narrate by means. Furthermore, he should have learned the hadith by heart if he relates it from memory, and he should have memorized the written text of hadith if he relates it in its written form. And when he participates with others in relating a hadith from memory, that which they relate must agree. And yeah, and when he relates the same thing that other people narrate, there should be agreement, not that he always disagrees with the person. And he must not be within. This is what the Imam Shafi wrote in Risal. So, and it's not just that he's transmitting things, and he heard these words and he's transmitting, but also he has to be someone who understands what he heard and understands what he's transmitting. We discussed already the fact that the person, and besides these two, just saying he's Adam Bobbitt, we discussed these I think last time or the time before, he must also be Muslim, and we discussed why. He must also be adult.
This is under Prophet, huh?
Yeah, this is just in the general categories, or general characteristics of an acceptable narrator.
The
Prophet is the Prophet? Adam Bobbitt. Have the Muru'a, these are the ones I mentioned already.
No.
He must be Muslim, he must be adult. We discussed the reasons for those last time. And as we mentioned last time, he may be, the narrator may be a man or woman, maybe a slave. Any of these things are not important as long as these other conditions are met. In fact, in many cases, the slaves and the ex-slaves are the best sources of hadith. Why is that the case?
Because it's close to the Prophet.
Well, not necessarily the Prophet. And if it's in general. For example, the ex-slave or the Mawla of Ibn Umar is one of the people who was the greatest scholar in hadith of Ibn Umar. Because he spent most of the time with Ibn Umar, serving him and living with him. And even after he's freed as a slave, when he becomes Mawla, they still have this relationship. Not like in the United States, when the slave is freed, he takes off.
Yes, before.
Yeah, what was your question?
Yeah, now I have two.
Okay, thank you.
The first one is al look.
If I tell you a hadith, okay, that I heard it from someone who heard it from the Prophet for example, and you should not change it to another dialect, according to Imam Shafi'i. According to those other people that we discussed last time, if you were a scholar,